John!
What?
Red 7!
I don't know what Red 7 means.
Hot route!
I don't. What is hot route?
Will you just go stand on the other side, please?
Down! Ready! Down! Set! Hut! 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 Hut!
Hit me!
Booyah! That's what we call a sack lunch!
It's time for the Soonerscoop.com postgame show presented by Eskridge Lexus in Oklahoma City. Eskridge Lexus is the official travel partner of Soonerscoop.com podcasts. Now, here's your road crew, Carrie, Eddie, and Bob, wrapping up all the action and reaction from this week's game.
Welcome back. It is the Eskridge Lexus postgame podcast where we once again, at least half of us, are actually in an Eskridge Lexus driving back from Nebraska. So it's time to pod. We welcome in Eddie. Bob is driving. I was like, I hope Bob's driving. Eddie, are you driving and doing the podcast? Please tell me no.
I am. I'll officially no comment on that. But let me tell you about the RX350, my friend.
Yeah, it's a nice car.
It has been awesome.
I really like those RXs, man. They're like the top sellers for a reason. Those things are really nice. We've had those a few times.
Absolutely.
So
absolutely.
Now you have like the
great drive.
You got the like the head up display and all that on that one.
Yeah, it took me a second when I was kind of fiddling around and setting up the Bluetooth. It took me a second because I didn't really know how to use. This might surprise you, but the Hyundai Elantra does not have a mouse pad to control like the television screen or whatever, the screen right on the dashboard. And it took me a couple, more than 5 minutes to figure out how to use it. But once I got it cooking, it was, it's been a lot of fun to drive.
All right. Well, you guys are headed back to Nebraska. You and Bob. And we didn't really know what to expect when this thing kicked off today.
Yeah.
But I think we can officially now say that Brent Venables has started to change the culture of Oklahoma football because we finally had a game. Bob wrote this in his article. I said it on Twitter after, maybe even during. Like, we finally watch an Oklahoma team today not play down to their opponent, which I can't remember the last time that happened.
It was, you know, I think that we're obviously catching a lot of heat on the boards right now because of some of our pregame predictions, and rightfully so. I mean, I thought today was a massive step in the right direction for the Oklahoma football program. Don't get me wrong. Nebraska is not a good football team. They are in a bad way right now. But, I mean, truly, when was the last time
they came out and hit? They came out and socked Oklahoma in the mouth. Like,
sure,
I'm sorry, but like that in the past, that happens. We've seen it. We're scarred, and then we've seen it go downhill from there. We've rarely seen a team come out on the road, hit Oklahoma in the mouth, and have them come right back, thanks to a Dylan Gabriel 61-yard touchdown run, and then just take that bitch over because that's what they did today.
It was unbelievable, and you could just feel the momentum shift in the stadium, especially getting out of a 3rd-and-7 hole before the 61-yarder for Gabriel. It just, the whole thing, it was a pure dominant performance, a thorough ass-whooping, and, you know, I think that now it's like we talked about this on the unofficial 40 this past week. It's like today was going to be kind of that first step, that first road game before you get into conference play, and we'll get to Kansas State in a second, but you get it. It feels good. They played extremely well defensively. I thought they set the tone, and I think that this is starting to become a little bit of an identity for Oklahoma. Is they're getting a bunch of sacks, they're getting a bunch of tackles for loss, and I think that feeds into what the offense is doing. And the run game came together. Eric Gray must be a listener of the postgame podcast because he gave a big middle finger to all of us today. It was just it was a dominant performance, Kerry. That's the best first half of football since 2017 Rose Bowl. I got a lot of people saying that on Twitter today. That was an ass whooping.
I believe that's the most points they've scored on the road in a first half since 2018 was the stat that I saw floating around out there. By the way, I want to say this. I'm going to apologize a little bit in advance. Eddie is actually in a moving car as he is doing the pod with me. So we're going to have some audio issues here and there. You can hear it beeping in the background. So Just stay with us. We will get through this, and it might go in and out a little bit as we go along, but we wanted to, it was more important for us to get a post-game pod out than it was to have perfect audio, which I know I've been guilty of doing that in the past, and I think I have you back now, Eddie. But
I'm not dropping a bunch of F-bombs, I swear. We're not taking out audio.
Right. I was just explaining to them that you are in a moving car, and you know, yeah, we're going to be up and down a little bit with the audio stuff. But no, I mean, look, the offense, I mean, it was clear. I mean, and I need you to set the scene, because it was pretty clear that Dylan Gabriel was a little little unnerved, and it sounded like a great crowd on television. It had to be pretty good in person. But it sounded like it was at least good enough to kind of get to Dylan Gabriel a little bit early in that game.
No, and especially after Nebraska jumps up on, their first series, they take it down, they go up 7-0, and they have their backs up against the wall on that 3rd-and-7 before he breaks off the long run, and you're thinking, here we go, like they're going to be in a dogfight all afternoon, and they just went and took it. I mean, Jaron Kanak talks about a lot after the game, and this is kind of a talking point, I think, within the locker room throughout the week, is you control the volume, and they did just that. They kind of reclaimed everything, took back the momentum, and the rest was kind of history. I mean, after they tied it up, it seemed like the defense came out. Deshaun White had that big sack. Bob and I were talking about that before we started, and it just seemed like things shifted, and there that little bit of doubt that maybe, you know, you weren't thinking about it if you're a Nebraska fan going into the week, it almost seemed like everything began to avalanche on them. And, I don't think Nebraska is a particularly good football team, but the way that Oklahoma dominated that first half, I think speaks volumes about the direction of this program right now. Nebraska fans, I thought for the first, 5 minutes of the game, that was one of the cooler. I mean, we've been a lot of places. We've been to Tennessee, gone to Ohio State to cover games, Tallahassee. That was one of the cooler moments that I've been down on a field for, I thought. Just from all the pomp and circumstance before the game, it was really, really neat. And
it's a good place to watch a game, and you really feel like everything is on top of you.
Yeah. It's 42-7, and I mean, they had truly not a whole lot of people had left even at 42-7 after Oklahoma scores on the opening drive of the third quarter. It's kind of a remarkable, special place that they can pack that place with 90,000 after firing Scott Frost, and the people seem almost unaffected by it. And we talked to, Nebraska fans at the Malachi Coleman's game on Thursday night, last night in Fremont watching Cade McIntyre. There really was like a rejuvenation within the fan base after Scott Frost, and kind of being able to breathe and move forward with what I think a lot of people knew was eventually coming. And for Oklahoma to perform the way that they did, it was incredible.
Like you cannot have the scoreboard page up on ESPN.com because the Home Depot plays every 5 seconds. I'm sorry. I swear to God. I just wanted to look at scores. I just wanted to be abreast of scores. But ESPN, you suck with your stupid autoplay ads all the time, all right? It was impressive. And I, like you said, we know Nebraska's not any good. But they're, how many times have OU fans looked at other teams like Alabama and said, why is it that we can't step on somebody's throat like they do? When we get up, like, why do we always let teams back into it? And, it reminded me a lot. It's like the more we see Brent Venables coach and the way he coaches and the things he demands from his team, you would never have Brent Venables coming out like Lincoln Riley did last year at 9-0 saying, complaining and whining and crying that people were acting like they had lost 9 games. Like, because what? He understands winning is just not enough. It's the way that you win. Like, and Brent Venables is not going to settle for a team that wins shitty. He's just not going to. Like, and because he has that standard, his team is living up to that standard. Yeah, we can get into all his slogans and the best is the standard and all that stuff, but you're never going to have to worry about knowing as a fan that your team is playing like shit but still winning and that being okay, or a coach demanding that you be okay with it. And I mean, to me, like, the more I go through this stuff, the more last year just pisses me off in the way that the fans got treated by Lincoln Riley specifically.
I don't know any other way to say it, and it's such a cliche, like, kind of roll your eyes bullshit line, but the culture right now within the program just, and we talked about this back during the spring, the way that the players were answering questions, the confidence within one another. I mean, it's kind of special in a way. And I don't know how to really like put it into words, but just some of the stuff that you see before. If you saw the video that I tweeted out from like right before they take the field, Brent's like in front of him and he's given this like, "This is Sparta," basically, like pep up speech. And there's just a certain look that they have that they just haven't had in a long time down there. And it all kind of goes back to the culture that I think that they're building right now within the program. And, you know, I guess in a way, it's three games in. They got their first road win today. And, you know, it just feels different. And that's why you kind of wonder, like, to take steps weak defensively, though. I mean, I think the biggest thing that I take away from today is defensively, Nebraska was a good offense. And after that first drive, what was the stat that was being thrown around? The 73 yards on the first series,
the 70,
and then
yeah,
70 the rest of the half,
something like 77 and 73 or something. I don't have it right in front of me, but
I mean, they were OU's playing dominant defense through the first three games. I don't know any other way to describe like the night and day difference right now within the program than.
Yeah, I mean, it's extraordinarily different. And I think, Eddie, you might give it a minute here. We're having some connection issues. But no, I think the thing about it is like these players, they believe what the coaches are telling them. And then you go out and you see like a Jaden Davis play well today. And I thought Deshaun White was playing his best game before he got the targeting penalty. And I mean, you just see guys, it's like Marcus Stripling came in and had a really good series. And even though, you know, Reggie Grimes really wasn't that noticeable today, you had Jalen Redmond step up. I mean, they had four sacks today. They had nine tackles for loss. Like, this was a team, you know, last year that was good in the tackles for loss. But I mean, we're now talking about a team that is, you know, overtaking everyone else in this conference as far as a disruptive defensive force by leading the conference in tackles for loss and leading, I mean, one of the tops in the country. So, you know, it's a defense that believes that what their coaches are telling them is going to make them better on game day. And then they go out there on game day and they're better. And they haven't experienced that before. I mean, other than, and I know Brent has his slogans, but, you know, the speed D thing, it never materialized into, you know, a dominant defense.
It certainly helps when you have defensive staff that, you know, has the resume that these guys came in with. Obviously, Brent is renowned as one of the best defensive coordinators in the country, and I think it's very easy to buy into what they're selling, knowing these guys have been to the top of the mountain. OU's just trying to get to where these guys have already been, and I think that goes a ways in the locker room. They don't know anything else other than to believe in what these guys are preaching to them and what they're trying to build. And it's coming to fruition out on the field. And, you know, for a guy that didn't play a week ago, I thought Key Lawrence came in, even though he didn't get the start. I thought he came in and obviously had the pick late in the game, but I thought he came up and played pretty well as well. I mean, was there a guy defensively that just had a rough night? I'd be hard pressed to find one.
No, I mean, you had the one play at the beginning that was, Harmon and Broyles let the receiver behind him, and then there was never anything even close to being that egregious the rest of the game. Not even close.
They were incredible. And you know, I think that it starts in the middle with David Owegbu and Danny Stutzman and kind of what they brought to the program. Their elevated play, they're the guys getting the calls into the defense. And you know, just talking to David after the game, he's just a completely different person. And you know, for the first time in a long time, we talked about Well, he's really, it seems like they're high on him. It seems like he's making strides during the spring. And for the first time in a long time, you're starting to see some of this come together on Saturdays. And that has to be exciting, obviously, for those guys personally, but for the fan base to actually be able to see, you know, some of what the coaches come in during the spring or during the preseason and talk about, and they're actually going out and proving it on Saturdays.
Well, and I think you mentioned the people on the boards. I mean, we're used to kind of tempering expectations after everything that's happened the last couple of years. Like, I think I said this on the pod last week, like, I could have seen this being like a 35-24 game. You get past it, you move on, and just be happy with that. But, like, Brent Venables would never be happy with that. The players would never be happy with that. And here's the other thing, Eddie, that stood out to me today is, you know, you have your two first games against UTEP and Kent State. It became glaringly obvious, especially Jeff Lebby, and some of the blitz and stunts and stuff you saw, like, they held a lot back. They treated this like it was a big game. So if you want to sit here and say, oh, you guys, you totally hyped up Nebraska too much and they were never any good and you guys should have known that. Look, these coaches treated this game like it was a big damn deal. Like, it was going to be a dogfight. The Braden Willis,
called play. What a perfectly executed play. At that, the dialogue, the brain.
Yeah, I think we're getting into the audio issues again. I'm sorry. Yeah, we've lost you pretty much, Eddie. No, but I mean, Joel Klatt talked about it. And by the way, I know if you were at the game, you didn't see this, and I haven't seen an update. It was very odd that Joel Klatt announced it at halftime that. Gus Johnson announced he was under the weather and he would not return for the second half. So can't say that I've ever seen that before, but hopefully Gus Johnson's okay, because that's, you know, you got to be pretty sick to bow out of a broadcast, especially a big noon kickoff broadcast. So Eddie, I don't know if we got a better connection with you yet, but
yeah, you know what's crazy. I saw Gus Johnson sitting like outside of the booth before the game, before I went down to the field, and he was not doing well. Like, his head was in his hands. And I remember thinking, like, that's kind of strange that he's just sitting out in the hallway. He's not in the booth right now. And like, he had his shoe off, like he had a cast on his foot. I don't know what that was all about. It just, that Holy was crap. Very odd. And then to find out that he had to leave the broadcast booth, certainly hope he's okay.
Yeah, that's a little scary. I didn't know about the whole wearing a cast and all that stuff. That's kind of scary. But, I mean, get back to kind of what we saw. I think the point I was trying to make before you cut out was just like the coaches treated this like it was a pretty damn big game by the way that they pretty – not that they sold out, but they held a lot of stuff back for Nebraska on offense and defense.
No, they did, and I don't know if I was breaking up there, but that was a perfectly timed and executed play on the throwback to Braden Willis to Marcus Major, because that was one of those moments where you go, you can start extending yourself. You can start building a lead and kind of running away with this, and that's just something that we haven't seen an Oklahoma team do in a while. It goes back to this idea of you're setting a kind of a foundation defensively and setting up your offense to go build a lead, and that's what they did. And so I think that's kind of exciting in a way. And they did it. I don't know about you, Kerry, but Bob and I were talking about this as we were leaving Lincoln. I didn't think Dylan Gabriel just played outstanding today.
No.
He missed throws early, and they did that without him just being unbelievable today. And I think that that's exciting. And, you know, I don't know if it just had anything to do with Wanya Morris getting back in, but it seemed like once he got into the game, things settled down. Like, everybody took a deep breath and they really started to find some success on the ground.
Well, and you mentioned it before too, the Eric Gray anti-fan club here at Sooner Scoop, like, hey, we'll continue on. We'll continue saying that we don't think you're the best back on the team, if that helps, you know, with days like this. But he was impressive. I mean, Marcus Major did some impressive things. You got to see a 31-yard run from Javonte Barnes. Most of his runs today were just kind of plowing into the line and eating clock, and got to see a little bit of Davis Bevel. First turnover, by the way, of the year happened today with the backups.
Some of those snaps were really bad today from Rame. I mean, obviously, it didn't affect anything in a 49-14 game. But, you know, you get into the Cotton Bowl or something, and that's a big deal. And that's this kind of small shit that I would imagine Jeff Lebby and Brent Venables or Bill Beatenbow can go back to this week and say, that's not good enough. Like, you have to get that shit figured out.
Yeah, and the other thing that I really took from it is Jahlil Farouk is almost ready to be a weapon in this offense. I mean, he was very close on several occasions, did have a touchdown catch. That was one of the great throws that Dylan Gabriel did make today.
Just
his best throw of the day, I think, by far. And then, you know, seeing Theo Weiss get involved, you saw a little splash of Drake Stoops there in the beginning. But you just kind of start to see some of these weapons develop, and maybe that was part of the plan with Jeff Lebby. Like, he wasn't going to work too much on getting Eric Gray out in space, and he seemed like he had more room to run today. But just you go up and down that line, and, I mean, we don't need to say anything about Marvin Mims. I mean, the guy's a stud, and it was nice seeing, you know, you didn't have the opportunities in the kickoff return game today, but the punt return game was a weapon today, and that's the first time we've really seen that this year.
After the first punt return today, or it might have been the second punt return, Kerry, it was the longer one of the two. He now has more punt return yards in three games than he did last season. Think about that.
Yeah, because they never let him run the ball back.
I mean, it's just, that's the kind of stuff when you talk about like getting pissed off about the way things were last year. It just, it's almost bewildering to me, the lack of, I guess, attention that they had in special teams. Now, the Zach Schmidt missed field goal, that's worrisome. You can't be missing 39-yard field goals. But just the inattention to detail within the program a year ago, it truly, like, it's an overused line, but it's night and day. It truly is night and day different.
You know, we're kind of spoiled, though. I mean, it's not like Austin Seibert was making every 39-yarder. I mean, we're spoiled because of Gabe Berkich.
He got it a little bit chunky, I think. Supposedly he said that, he didn't say that, but Brent said that.
Yeah, I heard that.
He took a little turf with him, and you know, I think that's that kind of stuff. I'd rather somebody say that he chunked one than he hit it right and just missed it. You know, maybe it's an excuse. We'll let it fly this time in a 35-point win, but I'm not terribly worried about that.
I thought on the replay when they showed it on TV, I felt like he had kind of leaned forward a little too early, and maybe that kind of threw off his
timing.
Swing. Yeah, like it seemed like he was expecting the snap to come sooner than it did, and his body was moving forward before the ball was even snapped. So it seemed like there was a little timing issue on that miss. So, but no, I mean, look, there's a lot of good things to take from today. But again, I just think overall, the direction of this program right now, after three games and a first road game where even you said it, you've experienced few environments like that. And, you know, you look around college football today, and the world is a crazy place that we live in. I think I saw someone, some national person, it might have been Skip Bayless, I don't know. I don't think it was, but they basically, Skip was on the bandwagon today, man.
I know, I saw.
But no, I think I saw somebody that said best teams I've seen so far, 1, Georgia, 2, Oklahoma. Like, that's how much they made an impression today.
Well, I mean, you have Stuart Mandel already backtracking.
Oh, my God, he's had the worst day. I mean, today is the day that it all came. Like, the shit storm hit Stewart today. Kansas beat Houston, so they've won. They're now 3-0. I don't know what's going on in the Texas game, because thank ESPN. And Kansas State loses to Tulane at home. And now you're looking at that. Now, I guess now it's the trap game. Kansas State is now a trap game, since they were supposed to be the dark horse underdog. I'm just going to tell you, man, I know Nebraska fans know this, but you guys got to stop, you know, pumping up Adrian Martinez like he's somebody.
Yeah.
He's not a good quarterback.
I saw Kleiman say after the game they got to get him to be able to kind of unleash it. And, I mean, he's basically been ruined by Scott Frost. I mean, is that what it comes down to?
I was kind of glad they got Charles Thompson out of the game today. I didn't want to see him get killed.
Casey Thompson.
Sorry.
Charles would have might he might have died out there today. No, and Casey
Charles was much faster, quicker.
If they didn't take him out of the game, I mean the type of pressure that he was under, and you know it sucks that Deshaun gets thrown out of the game on that targeting. It is what it is. You can't leave with the crown of the helmet. I got a great shot of it though. I mean, I thought it was clean watching it live.
Yeah, that was about textbook 101.
Yeah.
It was basic. He lowered his head, him right in the chest with the crown. Like,
yeah,
I think he was on the sideline before the review even started. He was like, that was targeting.
It was just a dominant performance, man. I don't know any other way to say it. And it's like we've said time and time again here on the post game pod. It's refreshing to see, to be able to go up there and kind of face that adversity early and just kind of sidestep it and punch right back.
I'm going to tell you this, though, Eddie, like being on Twitter all game, a lot of OU fans don't know how to handle today. Like it's a strange experience to watch OU just go out and take care of business and dominate and not let another team back in it. And I mean, that second half was boring.
Yeah.
It was that game was over. And you knew it was over, but you wondered, could they let him back in? And then the backups are in there, and they're getting stops, and you're like, what world am I living in? Because, like, Mike Stoops and Alex Grinch, they didn't even have to bring in wholesale backups. If they brought in a corner and a safety, they were giving up plays, and the other team was scoring points. Like, they're playing entire second and third units. And they're stopping the offense on the other side of the ball. It's a very strange sensation. And I felt it too. I know the fans were feeling it. It's going to take getting used to having a good defense, having a capable defense.
And I mean, Brent read off like the, after the scoring drive to open the game, he read off like the play-by-play, you know, it's like punt, 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 punt.
Right, yeah, I heard that. Yeah.
It's just like, it's almost weird to hear it that way because it isn't what Oklahoma fans have been used to over the last couple of years. And, you know, I don't think that Nebraska, like their offensive line is terrible, but the type of pressure and just the physicality that Oklahoma had today, they were pretty good tackling again outside of, you know, Jaden Davis misses that tackle at the beginning of the game. Outside of that, though, they tackled well again today. Now there were some. I guess
Jaren Kanak had a couple of just wide open shots at the quarterback that he'd miss. So
yeah, and I think that like stuff like that's going to come with time. But you know, the bad or the good far outweighed the bad as far as Jaren Kanak goes.
When he
had to come into the game. I mean, the kid is going to be unbelievable when it's all said and done, when Brent gets done with him. I think Brent, even talking about Jaren, like he gets excited just as much as the fan base gets watching seven out on the field.
Yeah, no, there's definitely a kind of a teacher's pet vibe there. I mean, like just everything he's gone through and to decommit from Clemson when basically he went out of his way to come play for Brent. I think he really appreciates that. It seems like he does.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I think the thing to note, though, is he came in and played Cheetah. Like, that's, you know, that's how athletic that guy is. And people were griping on Twitter in the Scoop mentions about why didn't Brent ever blitz. He called it up today, and he had some wide-open blitz. Like, you could tell he ran some stuff today that he hasn't run in a while because Nebraska offensive line just let guys run free at times.
Do you think that, like, if you could really, I hate to break out the Jim Traver truth serum, but if you could have a one-on-one conversation with Brent, you think he's a little surprised how quickly this has come together? And, again, they've played three games. They haven't really accomplished a whole bunch. But, I mean, like you said, they're top five in the country right now. They've led the Power Five in tackles for loss coming into today and only added to that total. Do you think he's a little surprised how quickly this has come together?
I would say yes, but I would also say he'd never admit that, and he'd say they still have to get better.
Sure.
I mean, sure. I think no matter how good it gets, I think he's still going to keep pushing for it to be better just because he's trying to establish that baseline with his players. But yeah, I think deep down they're like, okay, this has not been a disaster. This is actually working pretty well.
I mean, they've allowed, what, 30 points in the first three games? I think OU tweeted it out. Somebody tweeted it after the game. They've allowed 30 points in the first three games. They allowed 35 to Tulane a year ago in the opener.
Yeah. I mean, it's been very good. It's been, like I said, I thought they'd score 24 points today.
Yeah.
And I thought Oklahoma would score 35. I mean, so they're way surpassed my expectations at this point. And like I said, part of that is just years of being beaten down and expecting the worst and never being expected to finish a team and always playing down to the level of the team you're playing, even though you know you have better. I mean, it goes back to Kyler. I mean, it goes back to Iowa State and Baker. I mean, it's just you've seen it so much.
This team would have been in a shootout with a bunch of, like, last year's team would have been in a shootout with Nebraska today.
Yeah, I mean, they kind of were a year ago.
No, I truly believe that. Last year's team would have been in a complete shootout with Nebraska today.
And also, every quarterback that they played a year ago would look really good.
Yeah.
I mean, like
I almost got kicked out of the Kansas press box a year ago. because the quarterback threw for 300 yards. I mean, it's something to be said about the work they've put in, obviously, but it's,
I mean, people are their praise of Adrian Martinez is almost directly related to the fact that he almost brought Nebraska back against Oklahoma last year.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, and the Pratt kid from Tulane, a nice player, and he won today in Manhattan, but everybody thought he was going to be like a dark horse Heisman guy after that game a year ago.
Yeah.
And Casey Thompson was not anywhere near the quarterback he was a year ago for Texas.
No, they got after him pretty good. And I think that, like, those first couple series after the touchdown to tie it up after the Gabriel touchdown, they just completely took control of the game. And a lot of that has to do with Oklahoma coming out and forcing three and outs and never letting Nebraska punch back.
Yeah. And it's gonna be interesting to see, you know, what happens with Martinez and how well he plays next week. But, and I said this before the game, I think it was on radio, but to me, Casey Thompson is the lowest running threat that they're going to face. Like, of all these, like, I don't really look at Casey as a dual threat quarterback because he can run, but he's not a big guy, and he really does stay in the pocket and want to throw the ball.
Yeah.
He doesn't to run. Like, I think the Schley guy was a better runner than he is. And I think UTEP's quarterback was probably a better runner than he was.
I'd probably agree with that. Yeah. I'd agree with that.
But it was hard to watch. I mean, I was glad that they finally got him out.
I mean, Davis Bevel came into the game with 7-11 left in the third quarter.
I know. It was just, it was one of those things that was like, what are they going to do? Like, you can't just keep Dylan Gabriel in the game because they're just going to keep scoring.
Yeah.
It was not fun for them to manage that.
No, because you don't want to necessarily just embarrass them. I mean, I know
when they kind of put Barnes in there and they just let him just stick his head in the middle of the pile. It's like, it was just kind of killing clock.
Yeah. Which is almost, I guess, in a way, almost more disrespectful that you're just like, yeah, this game's over. I know that there's 8 minutes left in the third quarter, but we're done here. All right, offensive line wise.
Yeah.
I mean,
the protection was fantastic.
I don't want to. Well, and I think Nebraska's defensive line, not very good.
No, we said that before the game.
They're awful defensively, but I thought that they played a lot better. There were holes being opened today that just simply haven't been there over the last two games.
What was amazing was, like, OU couldn't move them around, and then Gabriel had that 61-yard run, and it just seemed like their whole defense fell apart from that point.
Yeah. I don't know if you could tell on television, but, and we talked about this on the unofficial 40 going into the game, Nebraska speed defensively is just atrocious. I mean,
it's a bunch of tryhards out there.
It's hard to watch a once proud program just be so terrible defensively. I mean,
did you see the video? I think it was OU Knightley kid that took it before the game. I bet you haven't seen it yet. So I guess some Nebraska and Big Ten officials were standing there as Oklahoma was coming out of their locker room for warmups, and you hear one of them say, "They're just a little bit bigger than our guys are."
Really?
And the other guy's kind of laugh. He's like, "You're not kidding."
When was the last time somebody said that about an Oklahoma team? Like we're used to saying that about the
Alabama,
and the Georgias of the world. Now, don't get me wrong. OU is not on the same playing field as a Georgia or an Alabama right now, but it's just good to see, like, even the strength too. The work with Schmitty throughout the summer is kind of coming to the forefront. Like, somebody smarter than I on that, Space Mon or somebody, would have to talk about it. But it's completely different than it has been. And you're three games into this now, and I found myself wondering in the second half, like, if they take steps each week, how good can this team be at the end of the year? Today was pretty good.
I mean, I almost want to just say, do our little spiel of like, okay, what could be better? But I don't really know. I mean, when you're up by 49-7 and it's essentially, 5-6 minutes past halftime, it's like, I have a hard time judging that. I mean, or judging anyone.
It's going to be kind of fun to see, like, this week, and they're going to talk about breaking it down to the studs and all the stuff that we've heard here over the first month of the season, which, totally is true, because that's the way that they talk around the program right now. But there's going to be a lot of people, and because it was a big noon kickoff, that are, the Stuart Mandels of the world, that are going to come back around and say, well, now, wait a second. Like, I saw that they put up some graphic that had the top five hires during the season, and Brent Venables wasn't even on it.
He hadn't been on any of those.
How can you watch how Oklahoma's playing defensively right now and just the confidence that those guys are playing and not give some kind of credit right now to what Brent has kind of built in a foundation right now within the program? It's just, it's crazy to me.
I'll say this, Eddie. During the broadcast, there was a big, Joel Klatt kind of dug in on this, but he mentioned time and time again, like, this has been a program that has been in the college football playoff, and this is what they've been missing. The defense that I'm seeing is what they were missing. And so this narrative is now going to change. Like, all of a sudden, you can't believe it is, because, again, you're so used to people just shredding Oklahoma's defense and their reputation to fallen so far and this and that. Now people are switching on a dime, saying that now Oklahoma has a defense that can win a college football playoff.
Yeah. And good for some of the guys that were on some of those just atrocious teams, namely somebody like a Justin Broyles, who's playing pretty good football right now, to kind of be a part of it and be a part of, like, spearheading this thing to get it turned around. I'm not going to crown him quite yet, because obviously there's a lot of season left, but just watching the way that some of these guys play and the confidence that they're playing with, it's kind of special the way that they're putting all of this together right now.
By the way, real quick, Eddie mentioned at the top of the podcast, our official travel partner is Eskridge Lexus. I was actually just there on Friday getting my 10,000-mile service on the old IS, and ran into a big fan of the Unofficial 40, he and his wife. And he's a big fan of Josh and I. He's still not sure on Eddie.
That's okay.
He's 60, so,
I'm an acquired taste.
His wife had been T-boned. That's not a sex thing. That's when someone rams into the side of your car. And so they were desperate to get a new car. And Ed and the guys hooked him up with an L-certified model. I think they got an RX. They were able to get them one with like 3,900 miles on it. But they were just tickled pink to be able to get that. And want you guys to know that, yeah, the inventories are limited, but they are improving. I know right now they have my twin's car, my car in a 2022 model, exact same car. So if you want to be twinsies, go down and get one and then let me know. But the what you're driving is the L-certified pre-owned vehicle, and I'm sure you could probably tell people you'd think it's a brand new car. It's so nice.
Dude, it's been awesome. It's a great car, and especially for some of these, you know, longer drives, it's comfortable, easy to navigate. I've had a really good time with it. I'm gonna be really sad when I have to turn it in. I might just go on the lam and never be seen again. You'll have to answer the phone calls from Ed when I don't answer, because I love every second of this thing.
I think maybe, you know, you could get a couple of payments out of maybe you get several payments out of your profits from Make Lindsay Street Great Again.
There we go. Yeah, it's been a great weekend for the movement. I wish that people could tailgate on next Saturday, although Kansas State did not hold up their end of the bargain today with the home loss, embarrassing home loss to Tulane. Like, what happened up there?
I was sitting watching the whole thing. I mean, Kansas State could not move the football. They kept going for it on fourth down. And Tulane, they played their asses off on defense, stuffed everything. Deuce Vaughn couldn't get going. I think maybe he had the runs today. He disappeared for a while, went to the bathroom, and they said he ran to the bathroom, so it didn't look like he was hurt. But then he took a couple of it took him a couple of series to come back. But then he was back in the game. But they limited him, and like I said, Adrian Martinez, just not a good quarterback, not a good decision maker.
And Willie Fritz, man, the guy can coach.
Tulane just stuck with it, man. I mean, they just Pratt made some big time plays here and there. They busted off a few runs, busted off a few big passes, and that defensive line that is so vaunted for Kansas State, they had trouble getting to Pratt today. So they did a really good job protecting. But Tulane, they earned that win, man. I mean, I don't think Kansas State is a terrible team. I would say that was, boy, I mean, I don't know what's going to go on with Texas tonight, but, you know, I got to think Kansas State is hurting pretty bad right now after seeing what Kansas is doing.
I mean, when was the last time that you could look up and, you know, the end of September and Kansas had a better record than Kansas State? I mean, Lance Leopold, I mean, I know Nebraska's looking for a head coach. Sorry, Kansas. I mean, what Lance Leopold has done at Kansas is quite remarkable. To get them to be 3-0, wasn't there over and under at the beginning of the season?
2.5.
3.5?
It was 2.5.
2.5?
They've already surpassed.
They're already over?
Yes.
You can cash that ticket already?
You can cash that ticket already.
Unbelievable. And good for them, man. They've been through so much shit over the last decade plus.
By the way,
I mean, good for Kansas football.
You could have cashed your ticket for Vanderbilt a week earlier at 2.5 because they were 3-1 going into the day.
Clark Lee, man, they're another good program out there The steps that those guys have made is quite remarkable just to get them playing competitive football, both of those schools.
Well, we're going to know a lot more about the Big 12 tonight. I mean, Oklahoma State, it was in a laugher. I mean, absolute bleep show of a game. They scored in the first 28 seconds of that game. On a big touchdown throw. It was like 42-7, like at halftime or something. Arkansas Pine Bluff. Now, Missouri State was beating Arkansas 17-0 last I saw.
17-0?
Yes.
Oh.
And you know who coaches Missouri State?
Bobby
Petrino. Yes.
He should be able to get to ride a motorcycle on the field in Fayetteville if they pull that off.
He should be able to ride his motorcycle out to that slobbering hog water fountain and just run it over.
God, that would be embarrassing. Like,
put a chain around his
I would imagine
hog.
They'll get back into the game.
Yeah, I would think so. But yeah, that's definitely a trap game for them. I mean,
unreal.
Oh, you played Missouri State. They were awful.
Yeah. No, they were. They're not a good football team.
Yeah. I mean, it's 2 years ago, but they were still awful.
Sure.
And then we'll see what happens. I mean, COVID. Texas, I think they were starting Hudson Card tonight, even though they dressed Quinn Ewers, apparently. They dressed all their quarterbacks. I mean, I just don't. I don't like the game playing, man. I just you get into that Lincoln area when you're doing that stuff. It's just It's like just let your coaching do the talking for you and stop playing games.
Yep.
It just makes me think you're a little bit weak.
Or maybe you're just trying to hide something. Like, what are you trying to hide?
It's kind of like with Brent's. Like, what's the message to your players? Like, we have to disguise or hide things because we're afraid the other team might get an advantage.
Right.
Like, they might beat us if they find out who our starting quarterback is going to be. Like, that's a terrible message to send to your team.
Right. Well, that shit just wouldn't happen in Norman right now.
No.
Not the way that Brent's running the program.
No.
It's quite refreshing, man. I thought that, you know, it's kind of like we opened with. I thought they were going to be in for a dogfight. Nebraska goes down and scores to open the game, and just the response, I'm not quite yet to the point of like, oh, this team's special or anything like that. It's just special the way that they played today. I was thoroughly impressed, not because they beat a bad Nebraska team, but because they absolutely manhandled a bad Nebraska team. And that's what, if you're a team that wants to make it to a playoff, wants to win the Big 12 championship, that kind of stuff, that's what you go do. And I, you know, if you're an Oklahoma football fan tonight, I think you can rest easy knowing that the program is headed in a very positive direction right now. And just seeing the Cade McIntyre kid, I couldn't have been more impressed with somebody like that. Like, they're adding football players back into the program right now. And they're identifying guys and going to get guys that can be contributors and longtime contributors at the school, and that's kind of exciting. It's night and day different than what it has been.
You mentioned him, but let me ask you this: do you feel better or worse about Malachi Coleman after going to Nebraska this weekend?
Can I ask you who the head coach at Nebraska is going to be?
Well, was he on his official visit today, or was he just there?
I think he was just there. I don't think it was an official this weekend. But, you know, I mean, it's very obvious. Him and Mickey Joseph have a very close relationship. You know, it's going to be interesting, though. I think that him and Joe John, he spoke quite glowingly of Joe John in the interview that we did after the game with him on Thursday night. He's a really impressive kid, man. Like, you look at him and you go, yep. Like, he's not thick like an O.J. Howard was, but size-wise, I mean, it's everything. You can see why he is a top 50 guy. Like, he is very well put together. He's going to need to probably continue to get bigger in the strength and conditioning program, but all of those tools are obviously there. I thought he played well. The team that they played was awful. But you know, he was able to open it up on that long touchdown run that we got on Scoop HD. So he was a very impressive kid. It's going to be OU or Nebraska. There's no, you know, questions about that. It's just going to be really interesting to see how that wins out. I think Oklahoma, like, I didn't walk away from the postgame interview feeling bad about it. To talk about Joe John and kind of what they're building. And I think Caden Helms is, you know, obviously in his ear.
Yeah, yeah. All right, man. Well, you're starting to cut up on us a little bit more, so maybe that signals it's time for us to get out of here. We've got all the pod stuff figured out. This should be showing up on iTunes tonight at a decent time. I went through and spent the entire week revamping our entire podcast system, so from what we've seen so far, it's working beautifully like it always should have. So, but remember, there's the unofficial 40 and there's the Oklahoma Sooners post game, the Eskridge Lexus Oklahoma Sooners post game. But if you just look up Oklahoma Sooners post game, that's where you'll find us for post game podcast. So thanks to Eskridge Lexus. You guys be safe getting home. We'll see if you make it home or stop in Wichita. Well, I guess we got that to work out along the way. Look, you guys, you and Bob, I know Bob is sitting there with you, but can't tell you how much I appreciate you guys. You took off Thursday morning, you saw two recruits, you saw a football game, you're coming back, you deserve a little time just to sleep in tomorrow and watch some football and enjoy yourselves, maybe have a beer or something. So
I appreciate it. We have a no drinking policy on Sunday. There's going to be a lot of college NFL football to be a part of, but again, today was kind of a another notch in the Brent Venables belt. It was a lot of fun to be there. You know, I think it's going to be one of those games that everybody talks about being there, and just the way that they performed today, I think, is really exciting heading into conference play, and should be rocking at the Palace next week, and then back-to-back DFW trips with, you know, Texas obviously being that second one, and I think here in 3 weeks, we're going to really know what this Oklahoma football team is all about.
All right, EskridgeLexus.com. Check out our great sponsor. And if you're looking for a new Lexus, get in line. Let them know what you're looking for. They'll help you out. Also, SoonerScoopStore.com. Appreciate all the orders this weekend. We will be getting those out bright and early tomorrow morning or Monday morning and get those to you. So keep on ordering. We'll get them all shipped out on Monday. And thank you guys for supporting the store as well. So until... next week.
Hey, after, Carrie.
Yes. Go ahead.
Can I give you a little update from Austin as we sign off?
Oh, boy. What is it?
Texas San Antonio 17, Texas 7.
Wow. Well, I guess I know what I'm
They're
doing.
Back.
If Texas and USC lose tonight, oh, my God, what a night it would be.
Do I have permission to drive to Los Angeles if Fresno comes through tonight? I'm kidnapping Bob. We're headed out west if that happens.
Oh, my God. We got to get a truckload of Rush 3 Drop 8 if that's the case.
No shit.
All right, man. That's good stuff. Looking forward to seeing what happens the rest of the weekend with the college football and the NFL. So thanks. We'll be back next week after Kansas State. Another home game, so looking forward to it. Going to be a good one. And we'll see you then right back here on the Eskridge Lexus Oklahoma Sooners post-game podcast.